At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
The Bonfire Podcast, where we talk about the UFC and mixed martial arts with those closest to the fight game. I am your host, longtime MMA journalist and MMA junkie senior reporter, Mike Bond. Hope you all had a fine weekend, and although there was no UFC event, there was still plenty of compelling combat sports action. The two biggest cards for my money over the course of the weekend were PFL Champion Series Road to Dubai and BKFC Knucklemania 5, both of which took place on Saturday. To start off with the MMA side of things, I guess, wow, what a fight between Usman Nurmagomedov and Paul Hughes at PFL for the Bellator Lightweight Championship. Nurmagomedov moves to 19-0 by the skin of his teeth, retains the belt by majority decision in a great fight. What an exceptional performance by both these guys. But Paul Hughes really, I think, surpassing the expectations of many with his performance as the challenger. Nurmagomedov responded, showing a lot of heart and coming over adversity in that fight to retain the belt. In my book, probably the greatest fight in PFL history. I mean, I would have to go back through, but definitely in terms of the quality of the fighters, the stakes and everything, this one was a much needed moment for PFL to start off the year. So they should be very pleased with what went down over there in Dubai. Will we get a rematch? I don't know. I don't know if Hughes won, honestly. I know he feels he does. It was really close. I would have been okay with a draw in this instance. After taking another look, I think the 48-46 scorecard for Nurmagomedov was pretty solid. I struggle outside of a draw to give Hughes the win on the scorecards, but it was a very, very close fight. And I would definitely not be opposed to seeing a rematch. I think that's what they need to do. Will it be an immediate rematch? I don't know. I guess it just depends on how it shakes out. I would not try to let the momentum of this slip back if I was PFL, but does that mean immediate rematch? I mean, Nurmagomedov says after the fight that he thinks Hughes should win three or four more after this to get a rematch. I think that's unreasonable. I'm completely fine with the idea of Hughes having to maybe win one more or two more, especially considering Nurmagomedov said he wants a little bit of time off after defending his title three times in 15 months. So maybe it is not Hughes's next fight. He goes and wins one more. Will Nurmagomedov rest a little bit, and then maybe it's the next fight for Nurmagomedov. But I understand Usman's stance and at least wanting Hughes to win one more fight and re-earn that, have the guy come in off a win and more momentum. And I think that does make it a bigger fight. But nevertheless, this was a huge one for PFL, and we will see if they can continue the momentum forward. Speaking of strong moments to begin the year, BKFC had another seemingly transcendent night for the company with BKFC Knucklemania 5 in Philadelphia. They had over 17,000 fans at Wells Fargo Center, and you could feel the energy of that packed house through the broadcast. I won't go into the full results, but congrats to Big Ben Rothwell on becoming the BKFC heavyweight champion. And then, of course, congratulations as well to Jeremy Stevens for continuing to thrive over there and going into enemy territory, battering Eddie Alvarez to the point where his corner had to stop it after the third round. I don't know if I need to see any more Eddie Alvarez fights at this point, but that's a decision, you know, we'll leave up to him and his family. Stevens, however, is in a great spot after this. I mean, he's becoming a big deal for BKFC. He's 3-0 over there now, and it seems like he's really remade himself in the combat sports space, in the sport. We'll see how he can kind of parlay this, but I think a big one for BKFC. I mean, the Conor McGregor stuff, them facing off, them saying a fight's going to happen. I just can't get behind the idea of that really happening. Conor McGregor's got a lot of stuff to figure out, but he is certainly bringing attention to the company with these viral moments, whether it's at weigh-ins or in the cage. So he's most certainly, I guess, kind of got to be happy with his investment as BKFC continues to roll on. Lastly, before I get into today's show, last bit of housekeeping here. just some thoughts on the inaugural Fight League draft, right? Like, I won't go too much into that here. I think if you want to see more extensive thoughts, go watch Monday's episode of Spinning Back Click over at MMA Junkie. We talk a lot more about that. I could do a whole show on the freaking GFL draft and how that all went down, the surprises we got, but I think we got other business to tend to here. So go check out MMA Junkie's Spinning Back Click if you want my more extensive GFL thoughts. Now that all that is out of the way, let's get into today's show. UFC commentator John Gooden will be joining the program for the first time in a matter of moments here to discuss some major career news for him and his future with the UFC. And in addition to that, we are going to preview a loaded month of UFC action, multiple events, four events, and it kicks off on Saturday at UFC Saudi Arabia with a massive middleweight main event. It is the month of middleweights in February, but this one starts with Israel Adesanya against Nassourdine Imavov. I think a very compelling fight there, and it rolls into a bunch of massive matchups throughout February. John will be on the call for this event with Laura Sanko and Paul Felder, and we're going to talk a little bit about UFC Saudi Arabia and talk a little bit about some top storylines in our opinions coming in the month of February for the UFC. So it will be a lot of fun. Be sure to stick around to the end of the episode where I will update you guys on the Clarissa Shields signed glove giveaway that I mentioned last week. Appreciate all the kind comments that put you in entry for that. Keep showing your support on the program here in every way you can. It means the world to me. We're going to take a quick break and I will be right back with John Gooden. And we are back here on the Bonfire Podcast with a first-time guest of the show, Mr. John Gooden, one of the voices of the UFC. John, how are you doing, man?
Doing good. Excited. It's fight week. I'm about to get on a plane, well, tomorrow. So I've got to pack all my undercrackers, a couple T-shirts and a bow tie, and ready to get to work.
Yeah, man. And obviously your first call of the year, but some big news kind of coming around this. I know you announced the other day you had signed a new deal with the UFC after 10 years there. That's really exciting. Congratulations. Can you just share a little bit about, I guess, how long this has been in the works? Was it what you expected, and, you know, why things extended at this point in time?
Well, I'm never presumptuous, but I feel like I've got a good working relationship with everyone at the UFC, the team. I've learned how they like to do business. You guys might have noticed in the last year and a half or so, I've been working stateside. Mm-hmm. So that was a big commitment on their part to, you know, fly me out as much as they have done. But then there was peeling back the curtain a little bit. I was spending a lot of time between shows. Sometimes, you know, over the last 5 years or so, it might have been 6-9 months between commentary calls. I might get to do some reporting, maybe a desk gig. But the commentary is a bit of a monster. It's a beast unto itself. So if I'm out of rhythm, I'm obviously going to be a bit more taxing on the producers. So I feel like that was one of the reasons anyway that they were trying to get me in stateside. And of course, they're sympathetic to me trying to put food on the table. So yeah, really happy. I love working with the UFC. They continue to do so much with this sport. I mean, it wouldn't be anywhere near where it is today without the success of the UFC. And I'm MMA first, but you know, being part of the UFC is absolutely massive. So yeah, really, really happy. Let's go again. Let's see if we can get to 20 years. I mean, yeah. I thought that 10 was going to be a bit of a grasp, but I mean, we've managed. This is year 11. I've managed this far, so why not?
Yeah, that's unbelievable. Congratulations again. I guess, you know, we've talked a little bit about this before, like the inconsistency of the shows, and COVID obviously had a lot to do with that as well.
Exactly.
And how it's the UFC. Yeah, of course. So do you feel like at least though, like now with this, you're starting to get back some of that momentum you had maybe pre-COVID and knowing where the events will be, maybe knowing how many cards you'll call per year? Because as we see now, especially in the early portion of 25 here, UFC is starting to, you know, add more international travel to its schedule.
Yeah, it can only fill me with confidence in that regard. Straight out to Saudi, then I've got a week at home, then I come back out to Las Vegas. So yeah, gonna get out there pretty early, quick and fast. London's coming around, that'll be on my doorstep before I know it. So that's really exciting. Yes, they've made certain pledges to me in this contract, so I'm going to be involved at, you know, probably the same amount as that I was last year. Mm-hmm. I think that the guys do a really good job of spreading out all of the responsibilities and the assignments over a yearly period. Really tricky job. You know, we all want to be on as many big cards, interesting cards, whatever it might be. I'm happy to help out wherever in whatever capacity. But what a gig it must be for our overlords, if you will, to take a broader view of everyone that holds the microphone for the UFC and say, let's put him there, her there, him that, do you know what I mean? So I trust them that they'll make all the right decisions and they have our best interests so that we can all stay within a good amount of reps to deliver the highest quality possible, which is what the UFC expect from us. And of course, most importantly, what the fans expect.
Mm-hmm. And I guess just last thing on this, I know you could probably only share so many details as far as like what this looks like, but is there any new additions to this that, like, you know, within the contract, things that you wanted, like as far as duties or they added in that you could expect that would maybe broaden your horizons as far as like what we could see you doing over the course of this contract?
No, it's all the same. I'm really lucky mm-hmm. in that I'm kind of their utility man. So I actually do every job behind a microphone or the camera, right, or in front of it, and I do stuff behind. Mm-hmm. So there aren't many more gigs that I could do apart from call a Dana White's Contender Series fight. I haven't done that yet. People might wonder why I would look to do that, but I genuinely love like the more grassrootsy elements, Road to UFC. Yeah. I do a lot of voiceover work for IMAF at the moment. So I'm getting to see the new generation come through, at least the names, and start recognizing who's coming up. My credit, Mike, in Cage Warriors has sort of run out now. All the guys that I was commentating there that sort of become coaches.
Right.
So it's nice to reconnect in that regard. But honestly, whatever, whenever, wherever, I'm down. Love this sport. Love how the UFC do it. So, yeah, I'm excited to get to work again in 2025. One thing I might say before we move on to specific stuff, yeah. I do have a deal with UFC Fight Pass. I'm sort of in the middle of that for the year as well. And today, Mike, today at 7 p.m. UK time, my Oban Elliott documentary is dropping. I have a series called Up Close where I go into fighters' camps.
Yeah.
And I'm super proud of this one. Oban's such an open guy. Just I really vibe with him. And and I think he likes me a little bit as well. And that kind of comes across on the films because he shares a lot. We go around his hometown. I'm really proud of this work. It's important work as well, given Oban's background. So I'm not going to share too much.
Yeah.
But I did that. And I just got back from a week at the Fighting Nerds in Brazil. So I've got another one that will come out in a month or so. That's a bit of a big beast. It's like 4 days of documentary style stuff. So my editor is probably, you know, shivering in his boots at the moment. There's a lot of stuff. But again, really exciting. It's been a strong start to the year.
Yeah, that's amazing, man. A man of many talents. I can't wait for the Oban Elliott one. He's obviously had a great first year in the UFC and is poised seemingly for, you know, a really breakout year in 25. So everyone make sure to watch that. I guess in addition to that, the contract stuff, John, one of the reasons I wanted to have you on today, of course, you were calling UFC Saudi Arabia on Saturday with Laura Sanko and Paul Felder. That should be a lot of fun. And it's kicking off a pretty big month. Obviously, every month is big for the UFC. Only two events in January, though, but February is absolutely stacked. Yeah, I just kind of wanted to go over some storylines over the course of the month, as there's a lot going on, especially, you know, the middleweight division has, I think, three main events. The title is on the line, so it doesn't get much bigger than this. So I thought we could just kind of banter on some of what we thought are the most intriguing and compelling storylines for this month. I think we had about five each, so I'll give you the floor first, John. I guess what is the one that stands out to you most as you prepare to call for this card and go into this big month?
All right. Well, I mean, let's start with this weekend, shall we? Mm-hmm. And it's the headline's probably going to be led by Israel Adesanya. I've never been good at these headline things, but I'm intrigued to see what this new situation brings out of Adesanya. He has had the most incredible run of five round title fights. He's never been in this spot with form as well. However, coming off the back of his last fights, he was really positive about certain aspects of his training and his own performance, which was beautiful to see, by the way. And I always listen very carefully at Adesanya's take, because he's done things in fight sports that few others have. So it's often throws me off, because I think we swim in the MMA waters a lot and we hear a lot of the same narratives, but Izzy gives us something different every now and then. And that's why I'm even more intrigued about this one. it's Nassourdine Imavov who's going to give him no grief on the mic in the run-up to this. It's all going to be respect. It's probably going to be a kickboxing match as well. But what does fighting Nassourdine Imavov do to Israel's game? Will he be more playful, more creative, take more risks because he doesn't have this this positive burden, not finding the right words, but he's not shouldering gold. So can we see even more out of him? And I'm really excited about that. At the same time, I've spent three visits in France with Imavov, gotten to know him and his team pretty well. Really like the guy. Very quiet, mild-mannered, but hardworking. Got a new age team as well. What I mean by that is a young head coach with new ideas. And yeah, this could be a real shakeup. If he can get this done, he doesn't make a lot of noise between fights, but if he can get this done, that's absolutely huge. You know, and that will then definitely influence the headlines going forward into the rest of February.
Yeah, it's such an intriguing fight. I spoke to both guys actually last week and got their insights on it. I mean, Israel seems very locked in, but as you said, a very rare spot for him. I think his first non-title fight in 12 fights since 2019. He has never lost three straight fights in combat sports, period, even dating back to his kickboxing career. So he's got a little bit of that pressure on him with the back-to-back defeats. He didn't seem too worried about it when I asked him. But yeah, you just wonder like what the goal would be for him. Is he trying to get back to the title? He, you know, said the title chases me. I don't chase the title, which is a very classic, I guess, Adesanya quote that you kind of alluded to. He's got that different mentality. So yeah, I mean, this is, I guess, one that shows if he's still a guy to get back there and be like the title contender, or can Imavov break through and get that signature win? And he's got a great resume already, Imavov, right? Like he's got done some good work, but I think he's just missing that like signature win that can put him over the top in terms of like being a true intriguing title contender.
Yeah. And talking of, I spoke earlier of taking things for granted with regard to my contract. Let's not take for granted that Izzy's not going to be around forever.
No.
Like he has served combat sports for the longest time. And a lot of us fans only really got to know him through MMA, but you were just saying his kickboxing pursuits are extensive. So the man's been in a lot of fights. He's got a lot of wear and tear on his body. He's made money, and I'm not saying this is his retirement fight by any means, but let's enjoy him while he's here. But and you know, celebrate what he brings, because he brings something different. He changed the game, so I'm excited to see what else he can bring as he does either make another run or close out this incredible journey.
Yeah, and I mean, as I said, kicks off a huge month for the middleweight division. The co-main event, of course, on this card is Michael Venom Page going up to middleweight to fight Chara Bullitt. The weekend after, we have the title fight at UFC 312, Dricus du Plessis and Sean Strickland. The weekend after that, we have a fight night headlined by Jared Cannonier and Gregory Rodriguez. And then the weekend after that in Seattle, we have Brendan Allen against Anthony Hernandez in a rematch. So, like, the rankings could look completely different after this month. You know, the whole shape of the weight class could look different. Khamzat Chimaev, of course, is sitting out there. I think he posted as recently as this morning, like, I'm getting the title this year. So I don't know, like, do you feel like any of these fights here, you know, Izzy, Chara Bullitt, any of the names I just mentioned, can they lodge Khamzat out of that number one contender spot? Or do you feel like this is maybe a month that will determine who is next for next, if you know what I'm saying?
I think it's probably going to be Khamzat, right? But if either Adesanya or Imavov do something spectacular and Strickland upsets, then you've got a couple of storylines. Of course, Imavov's already fought Strickland, but it was up at 205 pounds. It was his first main event, so he was a little uncomfortable. Made a lot of lessons there. So there's something pre-built. If Strickland was to go after it, he also trained with Khamzat. So there's a little storyline there as well. But if Dricus becomes the guy to add another defense to his reign, then perhaps it doesn't work so well for Imavov, and then it's a Khamzat play. And again, I think all of the same things really occur for Adesanya. Yeah. So it's really interesting. But yeah, he looked utterly terrifying, didn't he, Khamzat? And I think a lot of people want to see him in that fight. the timings would work out because Ramadan stretches over March, right? So however it shakes up in the title fights, that gives them enough time to then, you know, meet in early summer, late spring, something like that.
Yeah, it's a fascinating weight class right now. I know Israel, when I talked to him, kind of the quote that, like, you know, was the big headline was the 185 division is boring without me. I don't know if I'd necessarily agree with that. I think it is pretty intriguing right now, especially when you put all these fights side by side with each other in the same month. I think Mick Maynard has done a great job with this weight class.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens at UFC 312. We can just kind of stick on the middleweights before we go into, you know, the next topic. But
can I mention the Shara Bullitt notes as well? Because I'm a little confused about where this one puts him. Like, I'm down for the fight, don't get me wrong. This, I will give you my money to watch him fight MVP. Yeah. Absolutely. But this is a one-time deal for MVP. Mm-hmm. He's coming up. He didn't want to cut weight over Christmas. He's got a bunch of other stuff going on in his life. You know, probably a good payday for him. Mm-hmm. Favorable stylistic matchup. Although he did go and put himself out of his comfort zone at Polaris. So I thought that maybe he might want to challenge and keep that run of grappling stuff going. See, but what does it do for Shara Bullitt if it's a three-round decision? I don't know. Just probably reaffirms and galvanizes his position, keeps him very much in the headlines.
Yeah.
But does it boost him up there when you've got, as we've said, these other guys that are following thick and fast, who are going to have opportunities aplenty? So I'm not sure, but we'll see how that all shakes out.
Yeah, he's such an intriguing case because he's obviously super exciting. I mean, had one of the best knockouts of the years in Abu Dhabi, but we're not hiding anything. Like, his eye is definitely an issue. He's got one eye essentially working, and obviously it works in, you know, areas where the UFC can self-regulate and stuff, but there's a reason they haven't brought him to, you know, a New York or a California or a Las Vegas or whatever. And you just wonder what type of limitations that puts on his career going forward. Is the UFC, even if he wins 10 in a row in the UFC, would they be reluctant to put him in a title fight, like, knowing all these various things are going on? So that's just always my kind of wonderment, and maybe that's why they decide to get creative with the matchmaking here, right? Like, fight a guy that we're just going to put together the most exciting fights possible with this guy, but at some point, if he keeps winning, you're going to have to figure something out and maybe get someone very legit to go over to him. I don't know.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, it's a tricky situation, but yeah, this is a great fight. I mean, as MVP said, he was talking to Farah Hanoun over at MMA Junkie, and he was just like, this is, you know, going back to the old school part of the sport. No rankings bother me. Like, I just want to do an exciting fight. So yeah, this is very, very good, man. Anything else, I guess, with this middleweight division while we're on the topic? Any of those other fights that I mentioned? Cannonier, Rodriguez, Brendan Allen, Hernandez, any of the stuff you find significant enough to talk about beyond these fights we've already mentioned?
Well, I think we're going to find out whether RoboCop is that guy. That is a massive jump up in competition. Really big jump. I mean, I like him. He's so entertaining. And maybe he's trying to, I think from memory, he's trying to sort of become less crazy, more tactical, more measured. But, you know, Cannonier is tough as old boots. You know, we saw that. Oh, sorry. And that leads me on to, what about Caio Barbalho?
Yeah.
He is going to be in Saudi because he's, is he going to be in Saudi? I think he's in Saudi.
Probably. I feel like he's everywhere.
Yeah, well, exactly.
He's one of those guys. He's just everywhere.
Down under, because I think Bruno Brazil's on that card.
Yes.
So he's going to be there, ready, willing to go. He told me as much. He is the guy in there at the moment that we haven't so far mentioned, but is on a hell of a streak as well. So he could, I don't want this, but he could swoop in on one of these cards and fill in as a main event. I'm certainly not putting that out there to the world for the gold, by the way, but somewhere else in February with all of these, if it's called upon, then I think he's good to go. So good opportunities there for him, and he's a big problem at 185. No one's calling him out.
No.
So let's see what's next for him.
Yeah, and it's really interesting too, I guess, just to note the other middleweight booking that just happened as well. They're doing a rematch between Marvin Vettori and Roman Dolidze. That's headlining a fight night in March. So yeah, all these guys are booked. So I'm assuming Caio, yeah, great point. Stay ready, man. Stay, like, keep your weight low-ish in case something pops up. You never know. We freaking saw the unthinkable situation happen at UFC 311 with Renato Moicano coming in on weigh-in day. In the one situation where we didn't have an actual backup weighing in, they had to pull someone from another fight. fights. So yeah, anything can happen, but a lot of these guys very much booked up. So yeah, we are going to have a different looking middleweight rankings, I imagine, unless everyone holds serve with their spot, which is probably unlikely just given the unpredictable nature of the sport, John. Okay, I will, I guess, bounce you another one here, a storyline for me that I'm interested in. It's still on UFC Saudi Arabia. Can Sergey Pavlovich rebound, right? Like, this has been a tough run for him. He was at the top of the world thinking he might be the next big killer at heavyweight. He loses to Tom Aspinall very quickly in a very short notice fight, and then comes back and loses a decision to his former training partner, Alexander Volkov, where he looked a little lackluster, didn't seem to have that same pop and explosiveness as we saw on that crazy first round knockout streak he had. So now here he is, comes back again, got a tough fight in front of him here with Jairzinho Rozenstruik, but you would think pretty stylistically friendly for him. So I'm just curious to see, I mean, all these guys have ups or downs, but it's just crazy to think November 2023, people are thinking this guy was the best heavyweight in the world, and now it's a very much different talking point around him.
Yeah, I talk a lot about like mystique and voodoo, right? People are beaten before they get in, and us as fans and media, we plump the feathers of the people in the spotlight as like they are just indestructible. They're going to tear through whoever, and then the bubble gets burst, and then that suddenly changes things and takes the pressure off opponents and makes it challenging for these individuals, I think, to a certain extent. They certainly have to go back to the drawing board and figure out, you know, what went wrong and what's happening. He's a really kind, soft, family man of faith, is Sergey. And I'm talking ahead of myself here. I really need to speak with him this week to see how that Volkov experience affected him. Because if I remember rightly, when Volkov went up to him after that fight, he gestured that he didn't want to shake hands.
The whole thing was weird, the energy between them leading up to the fight.
It was weird. But can I just say, Volkov emerged out of it like as a new superstar.
100%.
The whole thing with the coach, with the comb, and just the way that he's going about. And congratulations to him. I think he just picked up two Naga belts as well.
I think I saw that. Probably you doesn't know, fix his sadness from losing that decision, but that's a whole other topic. Go on.
Yeah, but it's just, we thought he was kind of probably just a gatekeeper at one point, but he's just, you know, he's been doing some really, really good work. But that Pavlovich experience is interesting. So let's see how he rebounds from that. Because I think we see him as this big, scary guy. He's just a machine who goes through it. But I feel like he's got quite a soft character, and perhaps some of these notes really, really played a factor. And if he parks all of that, can he go back to being the wrecking ball? But it's going to be a very interesting first minute and a half, isn't it, between those two? Because Biggie Boy's a very experienced operator, particularly when they're standing. So let's see. But that one, again, there's a lot of horsepower in that fight.
Yeah, I mean, the UFC's rankings, Pavlovich still number 4, and Rozenstruik is number 9 from what I'm seeing. So yeah, this is a huge fight for this weight class, a lot of significance, and we'll see which one of these guys can kind of climb. And did you have anything on your storylines, John, about heavyweight at all for the rest of the month, or should I go into something else I had on my mind?
No, you can move along. That was all I had for heavyweights.
Okay, so I guess just to parlay this, I had, how will Curtis Blaydes respond in Seattle in his fight against Kuziev, I believe. He's fighting a newcomer on the prelims, which is a long way from fighting Tom Aspinall for an interim title in Manchester. And I guess overall, like, you know, we'll see what happens. Can Blaydes rebound? Can Kuziev shock him? But it just leads to greater questions of what's really going on in the heavyweight division. What do these fights even mean at the moment? Like, if Pavlovich takes another loss, does it matter? Or does he have another year and a half to rebound before we get any sort of clarity what's going on in this division? You're overseas there in the UK, John. Do you hear any rumblings out of the Aspinall camp? Are we getting any closer to maybe getting some clarity on whether he's going to fight John Jones or someone else in the division moves on? I don't know.
Yeah, I spoke with Andy Aspinall a few weeks ago now, and nothing. I think they're hopeful, and Tom's got a lot of other stuff going on at the moment. They're doing a really good job of bottling the lightning, if you will, over here, getting some really good partnerships going. Yeah, we need work over in the UK, Mike, to try and elevate the sports. I'm working with the English Mixed Martial Arts Association to try and get it legitimized by Sport England so that they actually see us as a sport, not just entertainment. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of stuff going on and on that side of things. And we need guys like Tom to kind of be the flag bearer for it because he's just so media friendly. And obviously with his position at the moment within the rankings. So yeah, he's waiting. He's working hard. He's helping a room of other heavyweights. You know, Mick Parkin's got a big fight coming up as well. That's interesting, isn't it? With Marcin Tybura following in Tom Aspinall's footsteps, or perhaps I shouldn't put that pressure on him. But yeah, there's a lot going on there. I feel like Tom's sort of is in this period of giving back whilst they figure out what's going to happen on this big fight deal. Make it happen, UFC. Everyone wants to see it. Just pay the men.
I know.
And let them duke it out.
I know. I don't even know where to go with my feelings on this at this point. I'd said on a pod, like I think 1 or 2 weeks ago, like I thought Tom's, I guess, quietness was a good sign, right? Because he was making YouTube videos. He was tweeting things. Like when it was very clear, he was trying to convince, you know, whether it's John or the UFC to make this fight. And now it's been very like hush. He's not really saying too much or doing. And that to me is a sign of like promising fight negotiation, right? Like just keep quiet. We'll get the deal done and then we'll announce it when it's ready. So I don't know if some of that's going on, but you hear Dana's, I guess, semi change in tone, right? Like in Tampa, the last event of 2024, it was a very rare comment from him. I guarantee this fight is going to happen in 2025. Like he went out and said that on the record, which he does not do when fights are not officially done. And then, you know, in LA, he takes John Jones's number one pound for pound ranking away, gives it to Islam Makhachev, and I don't know, it feels a little more standoffish. So I don't really know what's going on here. Everyone wants this fight, but I don't know, is your confidence level high? What do you think?
No, look, let's put it out there. Yeah, let's put it out there, Mike. Yeah. This is gonna
positive
happen.
Energy.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, John he's never been in a hurry, has he? Particularly in recent years. So this isn't inconsistent. So let's see. But
in a hurry, though, John? He's only getting older and Tom's only getting better, you would imagine. That's what the critic would say from the John Jones
side. Yes, but I feel like when these negotiations get going, they'll get it done. Mm-hmm. I think they know that Tom will certainly be working away. And it's almost like, what's a good analogy here? I won't remember a boxing fight, but I remember watching them as a kid. You know, when you'd have the guy the champion would make the guy in the ring wait even longer for the walkout. There'd be like these big old delays before they actually come down the runway.
Tyson Fury taking 20 minutes to walk to the ring.
Yeah, there you go. So I feel like it could be a little bit like that right now. But when we get a bit of momentum, then maybe it's the summer. Maybe it's that international fight week, something like that. So there's time yet to negotiate this, but I know that Tom won't want to be waiting around. But then at the same time, yeah, you're saying John's age, etc. But I don't think he's looking to have many more fights and squeezing them in. So that the ones that he does, he's going to make them count financially.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And I guess to kind of go to what my point was at the beginning here, like what are these fights really trending towards? Because let's just say in the hypothetical world, this fight doesn't get done. John retires, which we all hope is not the case. But then Tom becomes the champion. And you look at some of these other fights in the rankings, like, of course, Ciryl Gane is the one that really stands out. Yeah. The fight hasn't happened. But, you know, Ciryl is coming off a very close win. And does he have the right momentum? Does he fight again or just sit and wait for this whole situation to play out? But you go beyond that, you know, Volkov, Aspinall beat him already. Pavlovich, Aspinall beat him. Blades, Aspinall beat him. Almeida's sitting out there as a potentially fresh name. And then, yeah, Spivak, Tybura, all that stuff. So it's an interesting time at the division.
Yeah, there's a couple of divisions like that right now. But these things always shake out, don't they? I know we get these feelings, but then something happens. Tom Aspinall has not been with us that long, and he made a very, very quick impression. So there will always be another, but we're impatient, and I get it, and I'm there with you. But let's not lose faith in a division just yet. But I understand what you're saying. So let's hope that John Jones, he takes the challenge, he gets the right deal, and we can all enjoy this one.
Absolutely. Okay, John, I'll throw it back to you as we kind of get on the back half of the show here. Let's hit some more of these storylines and headlines. Is there something else that you wrote down that you're intrigued by in the month of February?
I am, and it's bantamweights now. Bantamweights are in the spotlights, and I think we're going to see the turning of the page. And what I mean by that is obviously it's Dominic Cruz's last one. He's going out on his own terms. Congratulations to him on all of that. And, you know, he's got Rob Font as a dance partner. So it's not like a changing of the guard. It's more of a turning of the page. However, when we have Cejudo, number 7, Song Yadong, number 8, I mean, I feel like, I mean, he looks like he's still a teenager, Song Yadong. So, but what does Cejudo do from here? You know, win or lose? Like, how many more times are we going to see him? He's already retired before. I love seeing these guys, these elite guys compete, but I don't know intimately what his ambitions are. Mm-hmm. But that is an incredible division, isn't it? It really is. There's so much talent there. I love watching them. They just wow me with technical ability every time, and now, you know, physical endurance as well. So there's a lot happening there. Massive fan of Corey Sandhagen. Want to see what happens next. But then we've got these newer guys coming up. I made a note of, if you like, Bautista, Lockdog, who's fighting this weekend. And, of course, his opponent, Saeed Nurmagomedov, and Gafurov as well. So we do have some contenders coming through who are running win streaks and looking to make a real impression. So I think there's a really good turning of the page that we could get excited about in February and going through into sort of Q1, if you will.
Yeah, and obviously on the back end of the title fight we just got at UFC 311, it's a great time to kind of make your impression. I think a lot of people thought we'd continue to get that turning of the page to the younger side, and Umar Nurmagomedov would win that, but he did not. It was a great fight. Mirab Dvalishvili proved people wrong once again as a big underdog, and yeah, man, like, he is looking like such a dominant force at top of that division now. If it wasn't going to be Umar, I really wonder, like, who could be the guy to take that belt from him. Mirab is something special, but I had something a little similar on my list. Like, you know, will Dominic Cruz get that retirement high? You know, like, will he go out right on a high note? I wish we got the Jose Aldo fight. I don't know why we didn't get it this time. It's been sitting there right in front of us for a few years now, I feel like. But Rob Font, I think, is an acceptable choice in the spot. And yeah, just can Dom do it, man? This guy's had a lot of layoffs, a lot of time on the bench. Seems like he's figured out this is the right time for him to walk away. But it's always tough when you're like 1 foot out the door, already announced going in, and we've seen how the sport goes. It's more often than not, it's a cruel goodbye for these fighters, unless you're like a Robbie Lawler or something.
Yeah, yeah. But what's settling in that regard is Dom's got an incredible, already has an incredible broadcasting career. Yep. So we know that he's on this trajectory, mm-hmm. but he is... He's such a unique character. Like, I don't know him super well, got to work with him a few times, but he's so comfortable in his own skin. And he's like, you can't tell Dominic Cruz to do something that he doesn't want to do. And that sounds like a very sort of obvious thing to say, but a lot of us can be persuaded, right? Right. I don't think you can really persuade Dominic Cruz. So I know that he wanted to get, was it the Garbrandt fight? Maybe the Cejudo fight. Cejudo, that didn't happen. So, well, this is what he lands on. But yeah, I'll celebrate his work. It's funny, I was showing my wife and my daughter Dominic Cruz footwork. My coach came over last night to pick up. Yeah. I don't just do that naturally on a Sunday evening, trying to emulate that. But he's a trailblazer, and he changed the game. So yeah, it would be nice to see how he fares. Be a good send off. Of course, the best man must win.
Yes.
And while we were talking bantamweights, we at least have to mention Piotr Jan, yes, and that last performance as well, because he's such a seasoned vet, and just strategically, of course, technically, they're all like, it's a percent here and there, but I just feel like there are certain performances where he just wows me. It was the Corey Sandhagen one, mm-hmm, previously, and this last one against Figgy. I was just like, Jesus, this guy's so good. Just when you think he could be overcome physically, he just finds these different ways of winning. He's so good. So, yeah. The vets as well as the newcomers keeping it alive at 135.
For sure. It's such a great division. I've said for a while, like, it's going to be hard for any of these guys to keep it for a very long time, right? Aljo kept it longer than I thought he would, just given the competitiveness of the weight class. And then now we'll see what Mirab could do. I really didn't see a scenario where someone seemed like they were going to be able to separate themselves as much as he seemingly has now. So really impressive. I still think Umar is probably the most equipped to beat him, but we'll see how he grows from this defeat and bounces back and all that stuff. And yeah, hopefully we'll see Dominic Cruz do his thing one last time. Just please don't retire and then sign with GFL a week later. I don't want to say.
Oh, goodness. Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, he's already got his spot. I guess just quick sidebar on that. What did you think of that draft and all these names that are coming back that, of course, were made their place in the UFC?
Makes me feel a little uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Because I feel like we've said goodbye to a lot of these athletes and it's been the right time for that. So not all of them, some of them coming up, like real veterans of the game as well. And you're like, really? Mm-hmm. I mean, you guys have got to earn money and I can't begrudge anyone going out there and trying to provide for their families. But yeah, some of these decisions are interesting. And yeah, I mean, I haven't really done enough digging, but I do wonder like the longevity of some of these projects. Well, we've seen it before, haven't we? And I want the sport to thrive and develop, and a rising tide lifts all ships. But yeah, sometimes gimmicks and things like that, I don't know if they hurt the sport sometimes. So let's see. I wish success and nothing more, or nothing less, sorry.
Yeah.
I'll reserve judgment. But yeah, sometimes I just want to, I put certain names to bed and been happy with it and almost actually had a handshake moment with them. Thanks very much. You know, good luck in your retirement. And here they are again. You're like, oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, the Shogun one breaks my heart, honestly, especially because I just talked to him at the Hall of Fame a few months ago. The only thing I'll say on this before we move on is just like they are promising these guys a lot of money. And if they can get it, God bless. I hope they all do. The thing that kills me is a lot of these guys don't need to be fighting. And if they go in there and put their bodies on the line even further and they don't get this extreme compensation they're being promised, that would really hurt me. Because the last thing these dudes need is more damage or to put themselves through more physical stress and then not get the reward that's being promised at the end. So just please let these checks clear if they do end up fighting. That's all I can really hope.
And mental stress. I know that you didn't mean to admit that, but these camps, man, these, and to come back and can you imagine some of these individuals would have had to have had some really difficult conversations with their significant others. Just when the families have been, you know, because it is, I often think about the families of those that have, you know, supported an athlete's career. And then it's like the pressure's off and then you're back around and you're like, what does that do to the home life? So it's an interesting thought.
For sure. Okay, I'll go into my last one here, John. It is going to revolve around UFC 312 again. I guess someone being back in our lives who's been in and out of the sport is Tatiana Suarez. She challenges Zhang Weili for the strawweight title. We have been talking about this woman, potential champion, all this, all these things about Tatiana Suarez for years. It's being slowed down by injuries and time off her progress. But here we are, finally a championship fight against Zhang Weili, who is an absolute beast. So I'm just curious, like, is there being too much physical issues with Tatiana that maybe she is just not like the absolute peak athlete she could have been as an MMA fighter? Or is this a coronation that we've been talking about for all those years? And to beat Zhang Weili in the fashion she has some of these other fighters would be so impressive. But yeah, we're going to get our answer about is Tatiana Suarez everything we've been hyping her as since The Ultimate Fighter?
This is exactly the question. Mm-hmm. We're about to find out. She's about to find out, right? So let's just hope that camp's gone as well as it could have gone. Few athletes go through camp without, you know, some pretty decent injury and suffering. Perhaps hers just kept happening at the wrong time. And that can happen. You know, it can shake out. You can be super unlucky with that. Or it can be that the load is just, her body just can't take what she puts it through. So let's hope that she gets through this camp and we see a really glistening performance from her so that she can compete with one of the best to ever do it. And you know, same goes for the other side. Let's see how Zhang Weili looks and they can have a nice competitive fight. And let's find out who's best, because that's another division, which is, it's really tricky to look down the line and see what's happening. I think, have we got Yan Xiaonan and Vina Jandiroba in
Miami, UFC 314.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's a good fight, isn't it? Yeah. Yan Xiaonan looked great. Vina's on a hell of a run, so that's got to be a title eliminator, probably. I don't know. Does Zhang Weili
out there?
She is. She's had some inconsistency. What's she running back-to-back wins now? So, you know, good luck to her. She's certainly doing things a little differently in this run. Maybe that's going to be the source to the tonic to get her to the top. But we'll find out. But Zhang Weili, if she doesn't get the win, does she get an immediate rematch? Like, there's a lot of questions here, but it's a division that needs a couple more storylines being added.
No doubt. It's been a little slow over the past year, but we will see. UFC 300, of course, is the last time the title defended in this weight class. Okay, John, I know we're getting short on time here. I know you said you had written down some other things. Anyone you want to rattle off before I get you out of here?
Well, with lighter weight classes again. Flyweight title eliminator is on the horizon as well. God, I don't want to sound like a negative one, but we're now just touching on a few divisions where they need some movement, don't they? Or perhaps we just celebrate someone's authority at the top. But Roy Val versus Manel Karp, I mean, it's a really exciting fight, and it is a title eliminator from what I understand. And that sets up a potential trilogy for Roy Val, or a rematch for Manel Karp as well. DJ made 11 defenses. You know, is Pantoja a guy who can get close to that? I mean, I really don't know, but that's a division in the spotlight coming up. And I guess if we're just throwing other stuff out there, we are not going to get through February without talking about Alex Pereira and Ankalaev. That's going to build up pretty hot. And I mean, he's just such an incredible athlete, isn't he, Alex Pereira? He really is. And people saying that Ankalaev's just going to take him down and be, I'm like, when have we seen that? Like, I just don't know. I really don't know. But Pereira has... it's probably exceeded my expectations. When I look at what he's done across weight divisions, I'm not sure I saw him doing what he's done in the amount of time that he's done it without dropping much. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, I mean, and as a result of that, it's just, I'm just like, yeah, I think that you're as close to a superhero as it gets at this point.
Yeah, those guys, as you said, the build to that, which goes down March 8th at UFC 313, is going to really start coming to the forefront here in the next few weeks. And yeah, I'm really curious to see, I guess, what both of these guys think. You know, Alex Pereira was doing a little trolling there, but he ultimately took the fight that the fans want to see, the rankings are warranted, and the division deserved, right? Like, Ankalaev is on a 13-fight unbeaten streak in the light heavyweight division. Only person who's done it better in that weight class is John Jones. So he did get his title chance before. It was somewhat of a disaster and ending in a draw, but here he is back to it again, I think, like over 2 years later. So that's going to be a bit of a tough slog for him. Does that basically cover it, John? Do you think can we give the people enough preview content for a busy February?
I think so. You're just making me want to like throw the names out there. I'm just really happy to see big Jan Błachowicz back in training. Got a huge fight, obviously, with Carlos Ulberg later in March as well. But to see a man of his standing, his senior years, repair his body and still compete at the highest level, you know, talking about Ankalaev, took him to a draw. So,
He gave Pereira arguably his hardest fight at light heavyweight as well.
Exactly that. Forever tough. And one of the nicest guys in the sport. And what's the word? Unassumingly funny. Like, doesn't realize how funny he is, but actually quite hilarious as well. So I'm a big fan of Big Jan B.
For sure. Well, speaking of one of the nicest guys in the sport, that is you, John Gooden. Really appreciate you taking the time, man. Looking forward to this call on Saturday. As I said off the top, you'll be working with Laura Sanko and Paul Felder. Laura Sanko, give her some props as well. I think the first female calling a combat sports event in Saudi Arabia. So a big moment for her as well. And I'm sure, you know, the whole team will do this event justice coming up on Saturday. Early times here in the United States, but prime time over there. I'm sure it'll be a lot of fun. I've covered some boxing events in Saudi, John, where they've happened at like 4 a.m. So I think you guys are going to hit the sweet spot with this broadcast.
Oh yeah, well, if it's the same venue that we were in last time, I think they've had a name change, which is assuming it's the same place, which is a football stadium, by the way. It looked beautiful before, so visually people will see a few different things from this arena. They had some really nice lighting rigs, but yeah, I'm excited to be over there. I always like going to the Middle East, and I have a lot of fun working with Sanko and Felder, so I think we're going to have a good fun broadcast. We got our first UFC women's bout in Saudi as well.
Yeah.
We have
Jasmine Jazdavicius.
Yes, there you go. she's out there. They are former training partners. So there's a little spice to that one in a way. I think they both love each other dearly, but, you know, this is business and all that. So they're going to put it to the side. But both of those ladies go at it. So that first round in particular is going to be very interesting. Lots of storylines for this.
It's a fun card. Bummed we lost. Speaking of middleweights, bummed we lost Ikram Alaskarov versus Andre Muniz off that card. Yeah. But is what it is. Excited to see Alaskarov back, nevertheless, whenever that happens, because he obviously went through some crazy stuff last time around in Saudi Arabia. So there you go. All right, John. Well, I hope you have a great and safe trip out there. Really looking forward to the call. Really appreciate you joining the bonfire for the first time. I will take a quick break and then be right back to wrap things up. That does it for another episode of the Bonfire Podcast. Thank you so much to John for joining the show, and congratulations to him again on the new UFC contract. Hopefully many opportunities to him afforded throughout this new deal, and can't wait for his call of UFC Saudi Arabia this weekend. I will not be traveling out to the Middle East for this one, but we will still have plenty of coverage over on MMA Junkie and perhaps a little bit on this YouTube channel as well. Before I take off for the week, it is time. Producer Kamikaze has selected the winner of the Clarissa Shields signed boxing glove giveaway. He went through all the comments. He determined who he felt was the best one. I had no influence on this, so if he did not pick you, apologies in advance. Take your gripes to the man, Kamikaze. But he went with @GreenBandana/P5B, where he says, "I've seen all the Bonfire episodes. I love their length and appreciate how all the participants clearly prepare for each podcast. The variety in the list is fantastic. It's a fun show, and I will definitely continue watching." Hopefully Green Bandana speaks for all of you out there. Appreciate that very nice comment on the show. I will directly respond to you and this comment, and you can hit me up with your contact and shipping information. We will get that Clarissa Shields signed glove out for you. If I don't hear back from you by next week's show, though, we're gonna have to pick someone else. We do have a backup in place, so that is your countdown warning here, Green Bandana, to get back to me. And thank you once again for the nice comment. Either way, this glove is going out to someone out there, and hopefully we can do many more of these giveaways moving forward. But that does it for the show. Thank you so much to everyone for tuning in. And until next week, I'll see you back here by the Bonfire.